and Andrew. And Andrew was supposed to be on this retreat, and he got a phone call yesterday. Anne is in India, and she was in a traffic accident. Bus slammed into the jeep. She had 6 broken ribs, punctured lung, and a fractured shoulder. So Andrew went off today to India to try to help her. So many of you know her. I thought I'd dedicate this retreat, among others, to both of them. They're great supporters, great friends. Anne was, she took her 6 hours to get to the hospital. Can't imagine the pain she went through. Anyway, there, Andrew is off to try to help her. She's in Madurai. So send some good vibes to them, please, if you can. So we always do gratitude at the end of a retreat, but I always feel grateful just that this is organized, that all the wonderful work that is done to make this retreat possible. Arsalan has been incredibly diligent and helpful. He's such a good friend now in Ottawa. And, Philip also, and other people. And Dean has been involved, and the others who I know and I don't know. Nice to see Hua back there for the Boondocks. So thank you for everyone for making this possible. It's a privilege to talk Dhamma. It really is. It's something I obviously enjoy doing. So it's a privilege to be here and to try to share some of my ideas around the practice. Also just some thought to the folk in Galilee who run this. They invited me to give a talk to the staff here on Tuesday. So I was in a chair on Tuesday here. And they're very open. They're really a lovely group of people. They're inviting Muslims to speak here and Hindus. And if we really want to serve, whoever wants to use this place, a very open spiritual community. So we're very fortunate that way too. So we have this 9-10 day retreat together to practice. Now, many of you have lots of experience, so we're all building on the experiences we've had in meditation. So obviously what I say is only a part of what you're going to be experimenting with, and I'll just toss out some ideas. Hopefully they'll be of some use, but also do feel empowered, I don't know what the word is, but to do pursue your own practices, your own insights, your own intuitions on what you want to practice with, because each of us has a different kind of karmic program that we're working on. In terms of the retreat, what I wanted to do this retreat was get enlightened. And after that, go for it, it's important. But I wanted to sort of to dwell on just to think what three aspects of what are a part of the meditative, contemplative life. One is purification, the sort of detox part of our life, and much of a retreat is a detox. The restlessness that you might have, or I was just thinking about Anne actually. Ajahn Kusum and I were talking about that. If she, if it took her 6 hours to get to the hospital, and her body must have been holding all that pain for a long, long time. So you could see part of her practice from now till she dies probably will be releasing the tension in her body from that shock. That's an extreme, but and we have these things that we hold. Maybe they're emotional shocks. Maybe they're just things that build up over time. If we're caregivers, or we've got a difficult family, or whatever, and things just sort of slowly pile up over time. There's that kind of tension that we pick up, and so on and so forth. So there is a part of our practice which is a purification. Things come up which are unpleasant, negative, painful, or stressful, and we have to learn how to be with those in a skillful way. So I'd like to dwell on some ideas around that. I'd like to also then talk about purification, cultivation, that we have the capacity to develop skills. We have the capacity to recall skillful states of mind, to develop skillful states of mind, which we call bhavana, development of compassion and serenity, and so on and so forth. So that part. And then also realization, insight, that not only do we have to work off some negative things, also a huge part of understanding how to work off negative things is understanding, insight, realization, seeing the way things are, vipassana, different ways that we talk about that. So those three aspects, purification, cultivation, and realization are a good way I find to contemplate the contemplative life, the spiritual life. So that's what I hope to dwell on, see how it goes. We need to have we need to consider a framework for doing this retreat, and the framework, as most of you know, you have a lot of experience. The framework is the homage to the Buddha, the refuges, and the eight precepts. So we'll do that first. Maybe we will need some lights, probably not. Maybe. Thank you, Dina. And precepts are a traditional form of determination. When we do a retreat, we're making a determination to practice, to cultivate. And this is a traditional form where we set our minds, we make the intention to live in a certain way and to practice meditation in the context of the Buddha's teachings. So the first thing we always do is to pay homage to the Buddha. And the lines there are Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. And if you contemplate that, if you're not a card-carrying Buddhist, or Buddhism is a part of your spiritual life, but maybe not primary, that's fine. But just contemplate when you chant Namo Tassa, you pay homage to the Buddha. And what does that do for your mind? Well, for my mind, it's an act of recollection, this is a very important part of Buddhism. Practice of mindfulness is to recollect the wholesome. We can recall the wholesome. We can bring forth the wholesome into our minds. So when we recollect the Buddha, what do we remember? Well, we remember enlightenment. We remember a being who is enlightened. We remember a being who is compassionate. So even if Buddhism doesn't quite, Buddhism is sort of a part of your life, but not so important. And the Buddha maybe not such an important part of your life. Contemplate what that means in terms of the mind, not in terms of institutional religion, say. But what does that do for the mind? What can that do for the mind? When you chant Namo Tassa, it brings forth faith. Confidence that there is enlightenment, or there is a spiritual goal, some spiritual dimension, and that there is a being, and there are beings who have realized that. So for me, when I do that, that brings forth confidence, faith. Which is a kind of wholesome environment that you're bringing into your mind, because we practice in environments. So when you recollect the wholesome, it's like you bring up a wholesome environment to your mind. You can practice in, like, you can breathe air in Beijing or Shanghai, or you can breathe air in Anhui. And the Anhui air I prefer to the Beijing. I've never been to Beijing, but I've heard. The air is pretty rotten. It's hard to breathe. Same with your mind. If your mind recollects wholesomeness, then it's practicing within wholesomeness. So, like, if I'm a really cynical person, say, or I'm very down on myself, I'm really kind of self-critical, that's like practicing in Beijing. it's like breathing in Beijing. I've got this kind of darkness, which I'm always having to deal with. Oh, it's not the mark. I can't do that. But if you can bring forth faith into the heart, there is enlightenment, and I can do it. And there's a being who's enlightened. I don't know how you do that. That's up to you. Namotasis is just a bunch of words. But they're pointing to more than institutionalized religion. They're pointing to a way of bringing faith into the mind. So that's some ideas that you can work on. So it's deeper than just Buddha as belief. It's the power of recollection. We have this power to recollect the wholesome. So if you're observing, you're mindful of your inner world, are you breathing in Beijing or in the open spaces of the Ottawa River Valley? What kind of air are you breathing? And if the air is very negative, like it's self-disparaging, it's cynical, I can't do this, I'm a basket. If it's that, then don't breathe that. Recollect a more pure environment to breathe in. And that's the power of recollection. So the way that the formula is done for those who are unfamiliar with this, I'll chant Namo Tassa, that line three times, and then you can follow three times. And then the next lines are the lines on the refuges, Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. So the Buddha, in this sense, is used in a somewhat different way, and this is Buddha as awake. And the word Buddha comes from the Pali language, and it means awake. So when we are really present, when I'm awake to what's going on, not just in a perfunctory kind of walking around sense, but I really know, oh, I feel this way now. That's Buddha. That's taking refuge in Buddha. So let's say I'm feeling dispirited by my practice. I don't know, third day, third day you're supposed to be happy. I'm not happy. And I'm feeling dispirited, and I say, this is what it feels like to be down. That's that knowing, that I know what the mind is like, that's Buddha. That's not historical person, that's quality of presence. So that's Buddha, and that's what we mean by a refuge. You can take refuge in Buddha in that way. You can't take refuge in the historical person. But you can take refuge in just knowing or being present. So it's a very important part of a Buddhist practice, obviously. And the Dhammang Saranangacchami, the second line, is taking refuge in Dhamma, is the truth of nature, the nature of the mind, the nature of things, and Dharma is something that grows in all of us. So whatever understanding you had 5 years ago, all of us have more depth of understanding than we had 5 years ago, hopefully. We're not back to the drawing board. So we all have some deeper sense of what truth is, don't we? We understand our own emotions, our own body, our own histories maybe, and that these change, that they come and go according to causes and conditions. So that's taking refuge in Dharma, truth of the way things are. And then Sangha represents the practice. So we are Sangha in some sense, but Sangha is what do we do? We live morally, we live ethically, we live with compassion, we live with sensitivity. We try to understand ourselves. We practice meditation. We help each other in the practice. That's what Sangha does. So taking refuge in Sangha is the doing. It's the meditation. It's the precepts. It's all of that. So Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, awakeness, truth, and practice are the three refuges. One way of looking at it. There's many ways of looking at it. So the traditional formula is that I would chant each line, and then you would follow each line. So I'd say, I chant Buddhang Saranangacchami, and then you would follow suit. And then the precepts, if we go to 75. So the eight precepts are partially moral precepts and partially renunciant precepts. So the first precept is, I undertake the precept to refrain from taking the life of any living creature. So ahimsa, non-violence. So any violent impulses we have, we are passive, we don't follow them. And its opposite, of course, is we develop a heart of compassion. So usually this one doesn't come up unless you have a cockroach in your room or something like that. I hope not. But don't kill it. Take it out of the room. Spiders. But the spirit of it is, of course, that all living creatures want to live. They don't want to suffer. So we connect with all living creatures with a heart of compassion and non-violence. The second precept, and I think the precept to refrain from taking that which is not given. So this is not stealing, not taking that which is not given. Its opposite is generosity. So in a, if we're going to live as a, in an ashram or in a monastery, if we have honesty, then we feel safe. Obviously, our things are safe. Number three, I undertake the precept to refrain from any kind of sexual activity. So celibacy, this is a renouncing precept rather than a moral precept, and it's a precept that we have in ashrams or monasteries and in retreats. So it's basically if there is any sexual desire comes into consciousness and we witness to that, we don't follow that. So it's it's not a matter of repression, it's just simply knowing what that feels like, not making it a problem. The fourth precept, I undertake the precept to refrain from false and harmful speech. So we'll try to practice noble silence on the retreat. This is very, very valuable part of the retreat because it really can calm the mind down. So if you have questions about the management of the retreat, housekeeping things, Arsene or Philip will be available, and Dharma questions, I'm available, or the other bhikkhus are available. I think we'll have pieces of paper and pencils about, so if you have any questions that you'd like me to answer, if you can just leave the questions up there, I'll be happy to answer them. I won't go into too much question periods in the room, because I've found in the past it gets too discursive, so I kind of work on the silence more. Okay? Different people do it different way. Then there'll be a chance for interviews, but if you have any questions, you really, you know, there's something going on in your practice, please do approach me throughout the retreat. Happy to answer. And so noble silence is great because you don't have to be who you usually are. you don't have to be mom or dad or the worker or whatever. You can really just be with whatever's there, and it's so valuable. You don't have to be a personality. You can just be. If you feel down, fine. You don't have to make excuses. You don't have to smile. If you feel happy, great. Whatever. You can really just be with yourself. So the noble silence really helps your mind to settle down. Gives you a lot of freedom. It's an interesting thing of retreat. Is that we're kind of practicing as a group, but we're kind of really with ourselves. So an interesting combination. This talk I gave to the staff here, they couldn't believe 10 days of not talking. That was the hardest thing for them to fathom. But they said we get pretty noisy in that Sunday. The these people are the ones that serve us, the kitchen staff, and they've always been just watching us. They don't know what we're on about. They're kind of ambulatory schizophrenics walking around. But they're very impressed, actually. So they ask me, can you smile at them when they're walking around? I give them permission to smile at you. They're a very nice group here. Anyway, so that's fifth precept. I undertake the precept to refrain from consuming intoxicating drink and drugs which lead to carelessness. So, none of that. I undertake the precept number six, to refrain from eating at inappropriate times. And again, this is a renunciant precept. It's not a moral precept. So there are times when food's available, the rest of the time it isn't. So if you feel hungry outside of those times of eating, then, of course, you can watch the hunger. And this food sometimes is used as distraction. We're really taking away a lot of distractions. And so if you want to eat, fine. If it's not time, you don't eat. You just watch the desire for food. So it becomes an object of meditation. The seventh precept, I undertake the precept to refrain from entertainment, beautification, and adornment. And again, this is simplifying things. There's nothing wrong with adornment. There's nothing wrong with entertainment, but in the terms of a retreat, simply just kind of simplifying everything, honing it all down. So basically, you have your meditation object, you have the Ottawa River, you have the beauty of nature, you have your own mind, and you try to find peace within that. And so, if you've been really busy all week, and most of you probably have, there's a kind of restlessness usually. we've been answering emails and doing this and that. So bear with that. Bear with that, that you have no distractions. Allow that to just settle down. And then that is a very valuable part of calming the mind. And the 8th precept, I undertake the precept to refrain from lying in a high or luxurious sleeping place. It's always a funny one. This comes from the time of India, when sleeping on the bed that I'm sleeping on, you definitely have to be a king. But the idea is not to indulge in laziness, basically. That's what it means. But the routine is quite rigorous, so it's not a problem. So those are the refuges and precepts. Maybe we could do that formally, and then I'll say a few more words. Now, Stephen, would you like to ask for the 8 precepts? Can you do that? It's traditional that one person in a group asks for the precepts, so Stephen could do that for us, maybe, and then we could do it in a kind of ritual fashion. Got it there on top of 74?
Ayam Bante Sarnina Saha Ata Silani Yachama. Dutiyampi mayam bante tisarnina saha ata silani yachama. Tatiyampi mayam bante tisarnina saha ata silani yachama.
So I'll chant the Namo Tassa 3 times, and then if you would follow. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa.
Bhutang saranang gacchami.
Bhutang saranang gacchami.
Dhammang saranang gacchami.
Dhammang saranang gacchami.
Sanghang saranang gacchami.
Sanghang saranang gacchami.
Dutiyampi bhutang saranang gacchami.
Dutiyampi bhutang saranang gacchami.
Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami.
Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami.
Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami.
Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami.
Tatiyampi bhutang saranang gacchami.
Tatiyampi bhutang saranang gacchami.
Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranam gacchami.
Tatiyampi sanghang saranam gacchami.
Tisarana gamanam nititang. So if you look at the 8 precepts there on 75, I'll do the Pali word by word, because some people get a bit confused, and then I'll do the English in one line, and then if you follow suit, it's okay. Panatipata. Veramani. Sikapadang. Samadhiyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from taking that which is not given. I undertake the precept to refrain from taking the life of any living creature. Adina dana,
adina dana,
veramani,
veramani,
sikapadang,
sikapadang,
samadhiyami,
samadhiyami.
I undertake the precept to refrain from taking that which is not given.
I
Brahmacharya,
Varamani,
Sikapadam,
Samadhiyami.
I undertake the precept to refrain from any kind of sexual activity.
Musavada,
Varamani,
Sikapadam,
Samadhiyami.
I undertake the precept to refrain from false and harmful speech.
Surameraya,
Majja,
Madhatana,
Viramani,
Sikapadang,
Samadhiyami.
I undertake the precept to refrain from consuming intoxicating drink and drugs which lead to carelessness.
Vikala
Bhojana
Viramani
Sikapadam
Samadhiyami.
I undertake the precept to refrain from eating at inappropriate times.
Nachagita
Vadita
Visukadasana
Malaganda
Lepana
Arana
Mandana
Vipusanatana
Viramani
Kapadang
Samathiyami.
I undertake the precept to refrain from entertainment, beautification, and adornment.
Uchasayana
Mahasayana
Viramani
Sikapadam
Samadhiyami.
I undertake the precept to refrain from lying on a high or luxurious sleeping place.
Over the page, please.
And then I'll say this line once, and then you say it three times. Imani atasikapadani samatiyami.
Imani atasikapadani samatiyami. Imani atasikapadani samatiyami. Imani atasikapadani samatiyami.
Imani atasikapadani silena sukatinyanti silena boga sampata silena niputinyanti tisama silena visalotami.
So that's been going on for 2,500 years. Folk like us have been. Amazing, isn't it? What do you think about that?
What that whole ritual is, if we're thinking about the mice, is what I'm trying to point to, rather than just parroting ritual phrases which institutionalized religions do, what is it pointing to in terms of mind? It's intention. We're making a clear intention, clear volition now of what we're doing during this time. And what are we doing? Well, we're supporting each other by living morally. And we're supporting the practice by living simply. We're taking refuge in being awake and aware, being present, rather than like thinking about what I'm going to do after the retreat or kind of letting the mind wander, really being present, really making the determination to be present. We're taking the Buddha's teachings as a guide for understanding ourselves. So we're kind of creating a frame of mind by doing these things. Now, when you come into the shrine room, say, if you like traditional Buddhist practices, what we do in monasteries
is whenever we have a shrine like this, and we have a shrine in our meditation halls, we'll have a shrine, each of us will have a shrine in our rooms or in our meditation huts, and we always use that as a focus and a reminder of these same kinds of principles. So when we go into our room, say, or our hut, we'll go to the shrine first thing, and we'll bow to the shrine. And the bowing to the shrine and the looking at the elements of a shrine are meant to always bring us back to the presence. I'm here now. Awakening, awakening, awakening. Because the big problem of a spiritual practice is forgetting. We just tend to be so forgetful. And so we employ as many tools as possible to remember, to be present. So again, if you don't like traditional religious forms, that's fine. But do you have symbology or some? Do you have reminders in your life? Because certainly the consumer society is always reminding you, buy, 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 with all their adverts, etc., etc. They're working at you to get your dollar. So they have the Buddha working at you too. You need help. So the shrine, for those of you who are unfamiliar with the elements of the shrine, you have the lovely batik. It's Bijak, you all remember from the last retreat. He's a Polish friend, and that's also his batik. And this is a meditation Buddha, and this is a meditation Buddha. So the Buddha is known through the mudras, through the hand gestures. So you can look later, but that there are many hand gestures on that, hand postures, I guess, on that batik. But this is the meditation posture. Obviously, we can talk about that later. So on a shrine, on a traditional Theravada shrine, you have a Buddha that represents the enlightened mind. So when you focus on a Buddha, the idea is to, you can look at its aesthetics, that's fine, but that would not be recollection, that would be aesthetic analysis. So you can say, oh, I like his ears. Yeah, plaster, not bad. Ajahn Kusala made the big one. He's an amazing Buddha maker. But as a reflective tool, as a contemplative tool, it's meant to bring your mind to silence. So you look at the Buddha and you remember to be quiet. And just remember to be present. So your mind is thinking about tomorrow or what I did yesterday. Buddha. So they have a lot of those around, and you actually use them. Like in Thailand, they have stupas. Stupas are reliquaries. They remind you of enlightenment. So you look at that. Well, whether you do it or not, it's up to you. Yeah, that's a nice stupa, but it's silence. So then the aesthetics doesn't matter so much. You know, the Buddha, well, if it had three heads, serious problem, really. But if you're just looking at aesthetics, then you're just in your analytical mind. But if you're just stopping the mind, so when you come into the shrine room, you can do that. You don't have to bow. If you like to bow, bow. That's fine. If you don't, but just look at the Buddha and bring your mind to silence. Keep doing that. Use that as a tool. That's very helpful. Then the lovely flowers, which I think our West Coast ladies brought. I'm not sure. Anyway, lovely flowers. The flowers represent sila. And sila is moral purity. So the idea in spiritual life is if you live a good ethical life, a good moral life, then that's beauty. You know, a person who lives a good ethical life is beautiful. Right? It's a different kind of beauty from Mum's cover of Vanity Fair, which she got supermodels. Different principle. You might have been some magazines or something. Oh, what's that? So I prefer the flowers, the sila. So there's beauty in the human spirit, isn't there? Rather than just physical beauty, which our culture tries to promote through the ways it does things. And you know, in your own life, when you're living ethically, you feel there's a beauty about your own inner being. There's no remorse, no regret. So that's sila. And then the incense, we lit some incense, is samadhi. And samadhi is meditation or concentration. And that's the mind which is collected and composed. That's a very important part of the spiritual life, obviously. So the idea being the fragrance of the incense, or the little dot of light, is like the mind which is composed and beautiful, sweet. Yeah. And then the candles are panya, sila, samadhi, panya, morality, concentration, and panya is wisdom. And it's the light which dispels darkness. And Buddhism is a wisdom teaching. And it's basically it says that the problem of suffering comes because we don't understand. And if we understand, we can find freedom. So it's the light which dispels darkness. Sila, Samadhi, Panya. So you have a whole teaching there, sitting there. Morality, concentration or meditation, and wisdom. So that's the way the shrine is sort of set up. And to try to, I mean, try to use the whole environment here for contemplation, but really just like when you come in here, use the shrine, compose your mind, sit down carefully. If there are other people meditating, then please walk, you know, really carefully around them and have a lot of body sensitivity to how people are sitting. I think we better not do yoga in this room. There's lots of other places you can do yoga. So this would be the place where we do our formal meditation practice. So keep it very, very, very sacred that way. Okay, that's about this room. The schedule is we wake at 5:30, and then there's a session from 6 to 7:30. Then we have some breakfast at 7:30. Then the morning session from 9 to 11:30, meditation instruction. 2-hour break for lunch, and then another 4-hour session in the afternoon, and then a formal meeting in the evening. So if you're really exhausted tomorrow morning, then get a good sleep. Don't worry about it. Try to use the schedule as much as you can. But I realize that everyone works too hard, and if you're really wiped any morning, or you really need some extra sleep, take care of that first. His Holiness was in Ottawa, and he was asked about meditation techniques. He said, 9 hours sleep. Get your 9 hours sleep. So he's really keen on that. But what you find in meditation is that you usually need less sleep. But take care of your body. Be kind to it. And then do as much of the schedule as you can, because the schedule really paces you. It's very, very helpful. But don't get neurotic about it. You know, be reasonable about it. If your body needs sleep, it needs sleep. Okay, so that's that bit. Any questions around all of that? Precepts? Housekeeping things are all covered? Yeah, that's all done. Have I forgotten anything around those things? So those three themes I'll try to hammer away at. So purification, meditation, and realization. So I think people are quite, you look like you're pretty whacked. So out of compassion, we'll sit for 2 hours now and push on and strive on to Nibbana. No, I think we'll do a chant and finish the evening. So, by the way, with the shrine room, please feel free if you've got the energy to keep sitting here. It's really working, the practice. And then, if the last one could blow out the candles, just to make sure it's safe and turn off any lights that might be here. So, let's finish with a chant, and then we'll turn to the shrine to finish the meeting. Let's do page 26, sharing of blessings in the English. Page 27, which verses of sharing and aspiration. Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar with the diacritical marks on the chanting, the little triangles